Art Supply Posse. Our guest today came to my attention via the recommendation of someone I follow on Instagram. I'm so happy that she was recommended to me. Her beautiful art is right up my alley. Photography, film photography, actually, and art journals, which to me is the perfect combination. Hello, Mia. Welcome to the Art Supply Posse.
Hello, Kim. Thanks for asking me to join you.
That's my absolute pleasure. So let's start with what may be the biggest question of all, I guess. But that is, who is Mia Amphlett?
I'm an experimental photographer and I guess a self-taught mixed media artist. Very much self-taught.
Yeah. Same here. So that's all good.
And that I'm living in Brisbane, in Queensland, Australia, with my husband and my dog.
Nice. Perfect. And just as a totally unrelated note, what's the weather like for you? Because here for me, down in the bottom of Australia, it's gotten overcast and rainy. How is it in Brisbane today?
It's actually perfect. I think it's about 20 degrees and sunny.
Of course it is. Yeah, right. Okay. Shouldn't have asked that question.
I'm just about head south, so I'm going to be freezing.
Okay, yes, you will. You will. You'll need to pack lots more than you think, clothes-wise. Yeah. So what I'm curious to know is, well, lots of things actually, but let's start with how did you come to be a film photographer? Because, you know, we're living in a digital world, there's digital everywhere, and for me, I'm 47, so I actually grew up with film photography. That's what I did as a kid. It's what I did at high school. We worked in a dark room, et cetera, et cetera. But it's film photography isn't as common as it was when I was younger. And it's certainly not as common as it, you know, may have been. But I'm just wondering, how did you specifically come to find film photography, to love film photography, and why do you think it works for you?
I think I love it so much because there's just so many options, so many different, there's so many different techniques that I can keep practicing and learning. And I think with film photography, it helps me connect with people and have a positive impact as well. So I've used a lot of the instant films, instant photos that I've taken. I've used them to actually send to people through photo swaps all around the world. So I can actually give a lot of my art away. And I think that has a positive impact on people. They seem to enjoy it.
Yeah.
And as a child, I actually grew up as well with film cameras as well. So, yep.
It's what you knew.
And I guess, yeah. And I guess the best thing about photography for me is not having to explain things with words. The photos do that for me.
Yeah. If I think of the times, which is, you know, relatively often enough that I've scrolled through your Instagram feed, especially in the lead up to today's recording, you know, I'm making sure I'm just going over things and getting to make sure that I've got in my head sort of what I think Mia is as a photographer and an artist. I find there is so much experimentation in there with what you're doing, and I really love that. Like, for me, that's one of the things that I love about photography is it feels like it is open to so much experimentation. Like, I really, and I don't know, maybe someone is going to tell me I'm wrong, but I don't think there are really any rules for photography. Like, yeah, okay, you need to have understanding. Yeah, you've got to understand light and composition, that sort of stuff, right? But then that's it, isn't it, really?
And even the process itself isn't perfect as well.
Yeah. It
makes it even more interesting, like, you know, light leaks and failed shutters and film jams. Yeah, that makes it even more interesting. It's all those.
Yeah, well, they're not. You can't predict those, right? Like,
right.
I mean, I suppose you probably can. You could probably force the issue, but that's not the same.
I think that's what I actually love about instant film. It's that unpredictability of it. It adds to the magic of the whole process.
Yeah. So are you like me? Like, for example, I took just a quick snapshot of my dogs the other day with my, I've got a Instax camera. It must be like, I don't know, an 8 or a 7. I don't know. My husband bought it for me years ago, right? I don't keep up with the different iterations because I don't like care enough to care about new ones, right? Anyway, I took this photo of my dogs. They're in this beautiful pose and it was overexposed. And my first gut reaction was, oh my goodness me, I ruined it. And then I went, I love this. Like, isn't it? Do you find that too? Like when they don't work out like how you think in your head they're going to be, a switch goes off and it doesn't really matter. Yeah. Do you find that too?
Yeah, that's actually the anticipation of waiting for it to develop is fantastic. But then when you actually see it and it's not quite as you imagined in your head, that's even better.
Mm.
Like an extra sort of surprise.
Yeah, it's like, it's not even a letdown. Like it's funny, isn't it? Like I think that maybe that's part of the thing with digital photography is, I don't know about you or others, but like us, you have a higher level of expectation of its outcome being not perfect, because I don't think there's such a thing, but like being correct, you know, sort of on as many levels as possible. But when it comes to film, I don't feel that same way.
Yes, I feel the same way. Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't have to be correct or perfect.
So you touched on having a couple of like you like the different options and techniques that are, you know, available with film. So what are some of the things that you like particularly to practice and explore technique wise?
I like to use a lot of filters. So if I want to distort a subject, I'd use a prism filter. And just literally hold it in front of the lens. I like to intentionally overexpose an image to create a solarized effect, which is very bizarre looking.
Mm-hmm.
I like to use color filters to enhance the subject, also close-up lenses. And if I wanted to completely change something, I would use a splitter and do a double exposure. Or I might use a color filter on a cloudy day. So if you have an overcast sky, to me that's just a white canvas. The whole sky is a blank canvas for you. So if you photographed a subject that's very, like a silhouette, for example, and you put a pink filter in front of it, you've got this bright pink sky, which is completely unrealistic. It's very dramatic. And so to completely change something, I use colour filters a lot. And I guess the message as well, I would use, I use double exposures a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a lot of experimenting.
So with your double exposures, because I love those in particular, I've always been a fan of them. I couldn't tell you why. I guess, I don't know, I think maybe because it's real, but it's not real. Like, you know, there's that, just that hint of unreality to it, I guess. But which
story behind it as well.
Yeah. Like, because usually you're doing it for a reason. Like, so let's say, for example, you were heading out today, you know, with your camera and you decided you were going to do some double exposures. What would you be looking for subject matter wise or like, I guess what comes first for you, is it that story, that idea that you have in mind, or are you coming across subjects? And when I say subjects, that's a loose, like that could be architecture, that could be people, that could be plants. Like I'm not, you know, I'm just going to bunch it all in just for the sake of, you know, making it easier. But where does that sort of whole process, how does that work out for you?
I think it's a little bit of both. So sometimes I do intentionally go out with something in mind. I might have an idea or concept or even a quote that I've heard, and I'd like to create a photo that, you know, just fits perfectly with that quote. But I also just like to capture the quirkiness in everyday life. Just, you know, be curious, look for unusual things. Yeah, alter my perspective a little bit. So it's a bit of both.
Yeah.
I've always got at least two different cameras with me. So I've got a bit of variety and some colour filters always.
So how do you know which camera to grab? Like if you've got, let's say you've got two with you, for example, how do you know, like is it, I guess, and you might just say, Kim, look, I've been doing this for years, I know, it just, it comes to me now without any thought, but like, you know, is that a case of this camera is just going to work better, or are you still experimenting with which camera you grab?
No, I think I've probably used all of my cameras enough to know what suits what sort of photo best, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So, I pretty much know which camera I'm going to sort of choose.
So we're on the subject. Let's talk about cameras and brands and things because, you know, we might have some listeners that perhaps might be inspired after this conversation. So, like, what cameras do you use? Let's start with that and then we can talk about film.
Okay. I use four different brands. I use Mint Camera and Insta and Lomography and sometimes Polaroid.
Okay.
It's the brand.
Yeah. So for the listener who may possibly only know Polaroid, I guess it's quite possible because it's been around for forever, although we won't get into the details of it, but Polaroid today is not the Polaroid that we all knew and loved when we grew up, but, you know, that's another conversation for not for this podcast. But Mint particularly, I suspect, there would be quite a few listeners who don't know. Instax, they might know because it is such a popular camera, like so many people, you know, they're just literally available everywhere, which is so, it's the one thing I do love about that too, is just how easy it is now to buy yourself an instant film camera. But sort of, if you sort of talk about a bit about the differences between these, because I know they're vastly different, but the listeners may not. So, you know, what's sort of a bit about, and we don't have to get too deep into like the technology behind it or anything that, but, you know, we got, I know they're different sizes, there's different film stock, like controls, no controls, like that sort of thing. So would you be able to share with the listeners a bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Mint cameras use Instax film and they have three or four different cameras. They have a TL70, which is a twin lens camera, and that's inspired, I think, by the Rolleiflex camera with the two lenses. That takes Instax Mini and it's an aperture priority camera. So it's semi sort of automatic, so you can choose your aperture. So that gives you a little bit more freedom, whereas most of the Instax cameras, they're just point and shoot. Mint also has a fully manual camera that takes Instax square film, and that's the TL70 Plus. So that's also a twin lens camera. And you can control everything on that except the ISO because that's the film. And they also have an RF70 form, which is a rangefinder camera, and it takes Instax wide film. And it's also fully manual, which is fantastic. So you can choose the aperture and the shutter speed yourself. And I have all three of those cameras. the Instax cameras, well, there's just so many of those.
Yeah.
Instax Mini. most of those are fairly sort of user-friendly, just point-and-shoot cameras. You still get some really fantastic results, though. And they have made a couple of cameras in their range that are hybrid. So they're part digital, part analog. You have the option of not printing out a photo, and you can put in a memory card and save the photos as well. So that's not my preference because it's more digital. Mm-hmm. But be convenient sometimes to have that sort of camera. And there's also Lomography cameras. I have a few of those. There's a Lomography wide camera that takes wide film, and they have quite a lot of different cameras in their range that take Instax Mini as well. Too many to mention. And their cameras are really interesting. they're sort of very quirky. They allow for quite a lot of experimentation with the different sort of filters that you can attach to them. They have a thread on the front, so you can actually screw on a lot of different filters. Yep. Ooh. And Polaroid cameras, I have a couple of vintage ones, and I also have a couple of the newer ones as well.
Oh, okay. And how do you find those? Because I myself have never tried. I've got two vintage ones. But how do you find the newer Polaroids? What are they like?
Yeah, I think they're fairly good. I don't use Polaroid as much. So I'm probably not the best person to ask about Polaroid cameras. But I do like using them. They're definitely very nostalgic and I find them.
Yeah, I was going to say, are they similar to Instax in terms of they're an easy gateway to instant photography, as in you don't have to put much thought into, you know, controlling things. It could do pretty much everything for you if that's sort of what you're wanting to do.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is good. It's good to not have to think, especially if you're new to something.
Yeah. Although Polaroid has just released a new one just recently that I believe is fully manual. I'm not sure what that model is called, but.
Yeah, okay.
So that's just recent.
Yeah, well, I just thought I'd just pop in as well for the fact that, unlike me, our listeners know that I do use, I'm almost exclusively fully digital for my photography. I do have Instax cameras and a couple of Polaroids, but for the vast majority, what I do is digital. But what I have purchased is I bought the Instax wide printer, which is to print from your photos from your phone, basically. And I bought that because, funnily enough, I was actually looking, this was a couple of years ago when I bought it, I was looking to buy an Instax wide camera, but they are so ugly. And I just couldn't bear the idea. I'm carrying around this horrifically ugly thing. Like, oh my goodness me. It is honestly, it's just the ugliest camera I think I've ever come across. So I ended up just buying the printer. And I've got to say, I really like it. Yes, there is a lot. You don't get that, the hit and miss of how the photo will come out because you're printing it from your phone. So it's just a printer, but it just still gives you that beautiful thing of one, having a photo from your phone, right? Like, you know, so many of us take photos on our phones these days and we rarely even look at them again. And it is lovely to be able to print out, you know, photos that you've taken with your phone that you love, and then you can, you know, use them and enjoy them. So if listeners are if listeners are thinking about maybe stepping into this world, I would recommend, if you wanted to, if you're not quite sure you're ready to commit to an actual camera, the Instax Wide. They also do a mini, and I'm pretty certain there'd be other brands. I know Polaroid does one too, and I'm sure you can probably get others. But, like, having used and owning an Instax printer, both a mini and a wide, happy to recommend them. They are fun. They're nice to have. And they give you the option of printing out photos and then, so in my case, popping them into an art journal, which is actually also something you do as well, Mia. You're also, art journaling in mixed media, which is also really cool. So what came first? Like, was it the film photography or was it the art journaling? Like, sort of where, how did one come
from? The film photography, I did a little bit as a child. And then I sort of got into that with particularly instant film around about 2010.
Mm-hmm.
I think I bought my first instant camera and it just went from there. I just found I loved experimenting with different ones. So I started collecting different cameras that had different functions and different abilities. And I think with the art or mixed media, that was just before COVID. I think so around about 2018, 2019. Yeah, I bought an art journal and just started experimenting a bit and haven't stopped.
So with your art journaling practice, mixed media, so that means more than simply putting photos in there or, you know, using only one media within the pages. So what were you using for your practice?
actually on the pages, lots of different paint, acrylic paint, water paint, watercolour paint, lots of collage, stenciling, different tapes to sort of achieve a texture,
mm-hmm.
texture paste, old postage stamps, fabric, pretty much anything that I can stick down.
And it sounds like a beautiful collection. I'm wondering, because I'm a bit of a sticky beak and I love to know how people's spaces are in terms of like how they set themselves up to create. So do you have, because in my mind you're talking about all these different mediums and things and I'm imagining this great big like container full of fabric and paper and all these wonderful, glorious things you've collected. But tell me, what's the reality? Like, how do you keep all your bits and pieces? Because I'm fascinated by storage. I don't know what it is. I love how we all find different ways to, like, keep our things in a way that suits each of us. Because you know how we're all so different, right? Like, you'll do one thing and I might have the exact same supplies, but my result is going to be so much different to yours. And I think the way we store our stuff is also equally as important because we're doing it for how it works for us. So, like, how do you, where is all your bits and pieces?
Well, I have in my home, I have one of the rooms that's not used anymore. I've taken over it as my art studio.
Excellent.
I had furniture custom built for me quite a few years ago, including a massive big workbench. So that's where I am at the moment. So my workbench is used for everything, creating my journals, painting, a lot of photography, sewing, pretty much everything. I've got all my different art journals stacked up on a big bookcase. My art supplies, I had a massive big wooden chest built for me that slides underneath my workbench. And that's actually got most of my art supplies in it.
Mm-hmm.
I found I had, because I use vintage pages and old books in the journals that I make, I have so many different collage papers. So I actually arranged them in different coloured folders. So it just makes it easy for me. If I'm doing something that's pink and red, I just grab the pink and red folder out.
It's a good idea. Just
pinks and red. Papers, yes.
I love that.
Very organized.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and then I just have, I love anything that's vintage, so I have quite a few of those drawers from old sewing machines, those beautiful long wooden drawers.
Mm-hmm.
And it just so happened that they hold the Dina Wakely paints that I use, those tiny little bottles.
No.
They do in there perfectly. So I have another one full of paintbrushes, another one full of tools that I use for mark making. Yeah, so it's very organized but very eclectic as well.
It sounds wonderful. And I'm very jealous. That's the dream right there. So when you're working within an art journal, and you've mentioned different tools that you use for mark making and things. Is there still lots of experimentation going on within the pages of your journal as well? Because you're doing a lot of experimenting with the photography. Does that carry into your journals as well?
Yes, it does. There's always lots of experimenting, both with photography and the art. But a lot of the time, the photos that I take will inspire an art journal page.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm lucky enough to travel with my husband around Australia a little bit. And I noticed a few years ago the Blue Tree Project, and there's trees scattered throughout Australia. You might have noticed them that are painted blue.
No, I don't. You have to tell me. What is this?
I believe it's to do with raising awareness for mental health.
Oh.
And the prevention. There's a story behind it. If you check out Blue Project,
I will.
Yeah. So I started to photograph some.
Mm-hmm.
And when you've got a camera with you, you see something. So
yes.
To pull over and let me walk across the highway and photograph a blue tree. So that happened quite a few times. And now I've noticed in different states that I travel to, I've noticed these blue trees. So I ended up with a collection of photos. And I thought they need to go into something.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a beautiful old Learn How to Draw book. It was a massive big book. And it was probably from the 1960s. And it was teaching people how to draw.
Mm-hmm.
And I tore a page out that actually had an illustration of some trees. And I stuck that into a journal page. And then I did dry brush painting with a vibrant blue. So it was very sort of rough because the trees are actually painted with house paint.
Oh, so okay.
And they make a bit of a mess when they paint them as well, so which is interesting. Mm-hmm. You see all the blue paint on the ground. So that sort of inspired me to add, I actually sewed the Instax photos because you can put them through a sewing machine.
Yes, I do that. I love it.
Yeah. Makes a funny noise, but you can still do it.
But it's okay. You can do it. It's okay.
So that's a really interesting page. I really liked that because it's just all these big rough streaks of paint. And you can see the images of the trees behind them and then all my photos of different blue trees around Australia.
Wow, that sounds incredible.
Yeah.
And I love that's come from something you've seen and it's ended up on the page. What a wonderful thing.
I also photographed my shoes, my Doc Martens, a fair bit. I have a few.
Yes, tell me more.
I started a project just for myself in my docs. So when I wear different Doc Martens to different places,
mm-hmm.
I photograph them. So I've actually done a whole couple of journal pages on that. And that's interesting. I went somewhere recently and there was a permanent art installation of hundreds of rainbow-coloured umbrellas. Oh, it was a miniature rainforest and it had hundreds and hundreds of these rainbow umbrellas. And I wore my rainbow Doc Martens and went in and photographed them and thousands of photos as well. I've taken lots of photos of the shoes in all different places.
Yeah.
So they've sort of just gone into a big collection.
That's so cool. Are they in their own journal?
No, that was just, but that's a good idea. But no, they're just in on one page.
Yep. Yep. So, okay, now my brain has gone into overdrive. So I'm curious to know, are you working in one journal at a time, start to finish, or have you got multiple journals on the go?
I have multiple
journals
on the go. So they sort of allow me to work on multiple projects at once. So I can just close one and take another, do something completely different when my mind goes in a different direction.
I love it. I'm the same. This is good.
Travel with them too.
Yeah.
So that's what I really love about art journaling. I can just take it with me. For example, I'm going away next week for mm-hmm. 2 weeks. So I can take an art journal with me and a few art supplies, do that while I travel.
Yeah. It's a really nice way to remember a trip, isn't it? To record on the go as opposed to when you get back?
Yeah. It also means I don't have to restrict my art to just my art studio.
Yes.
You know, I've got it set up beautifully and I can. It's nice to just go out in a park or on a beach or on a road trip and take it with you.
I find it makes the memories more powerful, like to whether you're simply, you know, popping out to the local park or you are actually on a trip of some kind, but that act of purposefully either taking photos or working within an art journal or both even, but It's as if the intention behind doing it and then the doing of it makes it more, like it cements it more in your mind. Or at least that's what I find anyway.
Yes, absolutely.
Cool. So I...
Yeah, sort of clutter my ideas as well.
Yeah.
And test afterwards.
Now, you also make your own art journals that are available for sale. So yes. I do want to talk about that because they are so captivating and so populated with so many bright colours, which I love. You don't see a lot of that. Well, I don't see a lot of that anyway. So I'm wondering what led you first to be actually, because making an art journal is a whole different thing to purchasing an art journal and you know, using it, or a journal to use for art. So why did you decide to start making them? Not even the selling part of it, but just simply, I'm going to start making journals.
Well, I've always admired the handmade journals that you see. There's so much work in them and they're so beautiful, and the artists that create them. But I wanted to create something that was refillable and that could be enjoyed for a little bit longer than just a single use. So I designed a journal cover that actually suits a composition notebook, mm-hmm. which is a very cheap, readily available notebook. So I combined, I guess, my love of colour and texture and layers and also vintage items. I combined all of that to create a very chunky, shaggy journal cover. It's just got everything in it, lots and lots of layers. And you can actually fill them with the line notebook, the composition notebook, which is only a couple of dollars from a newsagent. Or you can use my journals that I also make the same size.
Yeah.
The junk journals you would probably use for art, whereas the notebooks, I guess, it would be more just writing or journaling.
So with your junk journals, are they, like, the creation of those, is that something that they, is, does that come organically? Like, does a set of pages come together without any thought, or are you actively deciding, okay, I want to work with this shade of blue or like this textured paper, or like how does it kind of work?
With most of them, I just have probably about 20 different types of pages that I've taken from vintage books, like sheet music, atlases, children's storybooks, dictionaries, all different pages from old books. And I usually just sort of gather an assortment. I put maybe a thin piece of paper next to something that's a bit sturdier. Mm-hmm. And I'll shuffle them around and then place them inside a cover that I make. But sometimes I've actually got a collection of pages and books that are specifically Australian. So I've made some that are more of an Australian theme. So, but otherwise it's very just... Yeah, there's no sort of set, mm-hmm. set way that I'm really. And the covers, I use a craft material, but it's very flexible. I think it's called Craftek.
Okay.
And I machine sew all the pages into the cover. And you can actually paint on the covers as well, so they're left blank. So, you know, you can put them inside the covers, the journal covers that I make, and use them. And then once they're finished, you could potentially decorate the covers as well and then replace them.
Yeah.
Do that whole process again.
Yeah, nice. I love it. So what would you say to somebody who has been thinking about, you know, trying film photography, trying art journaling? You know, maybe they've listened here and they've thought, yeah, you know what, I'm going to finally give it a go. Like, what would you recommend to somebody? I guess photography-wise, yes, definitely, but also the art journaling, like, because they are totally different things but can be brought together, as you do. Where should, what should somebody sort of, you know, if they're feeling a little bit hesitant, a bit doubtful, a bit unsure of where they should go or what they should do, or just unsure of themselves, what would you suggest for somebody?
I think maybe if you focus on something that you like, anything that you love, really easy to photograph it. If you like it, you're going to be naturally. And also maybe just go somewhere that's different, a different suburb maybe. I think if we look at the same things all the time, we sort of lose a little bit of inspiration. Mm-hmm. And if you, ignore Google Maps or your GPS, go somewhere completely different and just walk around with your camera and be curious. You know, look for things that are unusual, because sometimes I think the simplest things bring the most happiness. So just look for something that is a bit unusual and try and capture that. And yeah, also definitely. The take two are likely to inspire the art, because they're your perspective. The photograph it's your perspective on life, how you see things through the lens. So, your art should sort of really reflect, I guess, how you're feeling and what you're thinking as well. Yeah. And but be inspired by the imperfection of it as well, because film is not going to be always perfect. So, if you get the film jams in the camera and it ends up having a massive big purple blob because the chemical leak, then, do something with the purple blob.
Yeah.
Make it interesting. Add it to an art journal page. Don't throw it in the bin. Yeah, definitely. Be inspired by those imperfections.
I just realised we never actually got talking about film beyond instant cameras, because there's so much more to film photography than the instant film, which is kind of what we've focused on primarily. But you do are you using other film stock as well, other cameras as well?
Yes, just in the last couple of years.
Okay.
I started to use some 35mm film.
Yep.
Started to use some of the Lomography colour shifting films, I think they're called.
Yes, I've heard about those.
Lomochrome purple and turquoise and Metropolis. So they're quite interesting. They render colours differently on the film than they appear in real life. So that's really interesting. I just recently was given a Lomography fisheye camera, and that's fantastic as well. That's like looking at life through a fishbowl, which is really, really interesting. I got some fantastic with that. That's a lot of fun.
That's okay. What film cameras are you using? Aside from that, the fisheye camera, the Lomography one, but what cameras do you have for, traditional just film as opposed to instant?
I have a Minolta XE, which I haven't actually used very much. Before that, I had a Nikon EM, which is a little priority camera.
Yeah.
I had a lot of fun with that until the shutter stopped working. So I have the Minolta XE, and that actually has, I'm really excited about this, it has a multiple exposure lever on it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so especially for taking double exposures and multiple exposures. It also allows you to compensate the exposure as well, so plus or minus one or two stops. So that's going to be fantastic.
I don't know. Is it a interchangeable lens camera or is it fixed?
Oh, yes, it is. Yes. I only have one lens for it.
Awesome. Yeah, cool. Yeah.
I also had a little, I've only used it once, a little 110 camera.
Oh, yes. Yep.
It's got M&Ms all over it, the chocolates.
Oh, no. Nice.
Just a little novelty one.
Yeah.
I tried. The results were interesting. Yep. I've got a a camera that looks like a Canon Fanta.
Oh, yeah, okay. I've seen those, yeah. How does it actually, like, is it any good? What are we getting from it?
I haven't used it yet.
Okay. Yeah. We'll have to circle back to that.
Yes. I might use that after that. I've tested this Minolta. Yeah.
There's certainly plenty of gimmick cameras out there, that's for sure.
Yeah. I've got quite a few and I'm not sure if they actually work or not. I've got quite a few cameras that are just for display.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
So are you developing yourself or are they getting sent off to be developed at a lab?
No, I send them all to a lab.
Nice. Yeah, cool. Awesome. Mia, I think this conversation has definitely left me inspired and I'm pretty certain our listeners will be inspired as well to go out and try something just a bit different. Before we wrap up, where can our listeners give you a follow to see what you're up to?
On Instagram, I've got, I think it's Mia. _Amphlett.
Mm-hmm.
And for my journals, it is Kaleidoscopic Swirl.
Yeah, perfect.
It's Kaleidoscopic _Swirl.
Yeah, well, when your episode comes out, I'll definitely be tagging you so our listeners will absolutely easily be able to find you that way. Thank you. Thank you so much, Mia, for making time to record today. I really appreciate you taking out the time, especially on your beautiful, sunny Brisbane day, which, yes, I'm very jealous about. I really, really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for asking me.
My pleasure. My absolute pleasure, as always.